she don't wanna leave. She don't wanna let me go. And what we doing in this room right now? We can't let the neighbors see, so turn them lights down low. Lights down low. She don't wanna know.
Yes, 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 yes. We're back in the grapevine. And I'm your host, Manan Sabir. Remember to call in 833-212-1017, 833-212-1017, or hit us up on the chat. The chat is going wild. Sorry, guys. We had a lot of people on the chat. Today we had our guest, Shelly Conley, and also Mumu Fresh. So I'm going to pay attention to you guys a little more because we have a very special guest for to me. All my guests are special, but this one in the flesh is really special to me because he's always given me life as a man. And I'm very honored to have Tristan Gross in the building. How you doing, big brother?
I'm good, man. I'm good. With an introduction like that, man, you make a brother want to. Some tears falling out here, man. No, it's good to be here.
It's good. Man, I always do introductions and bios and stuff like that. But you know, this is a conversation, and I think you guys are going to hear. We'll probably be all over the place a little bit, just because I think it's only right for people to hear two black men who have. One, work together, but then two, have shared many important stories, mm-hmm. very, very vulnerable stories with each other. Some people know and some people don't. And there are things that we're going to share on air that are uplifting and also vulnerable enough. So, Tristan, who are you?
It's always fun. Like, I tell people all the time, like, man, I'm just a regular dude. You know what I'm saying? Like, people ask me that question. I don't really know how to describe myself all the time. I think, first of all, I am a husband and father.
Yeah.
My family is really, really important to me.
Yeah.
And
speaking to the mic real quick.
So I think they're... that piece of my identity, right? Ultimately, mm-hmm. As I think about the world and I approach my work, I'm always thinking about my wife and kids,
yeah.
And how I can create a better world for them,
right?
So I think that's it primarily. I'm an advocate for black folks and black liberation,
yeah.
And ultimately, what want to see. Justice, you know, mm-hmm. and I think justice comes in many different forms. And I think as we kind of make our way toward liberation, finding your lane or space. So, you know, I've worked on political campaigns. I've organized.
Right.
I've worked with young people. I've worked around comprehensive reproductive education, infant mortality here in Milwaukee, as a consultant around, you know, men and boys.
Yeah.
As a consultant around African American, engaging African Americans and using culturally responsive approaches, and, you know, now doing lots of work around healing. Was in the gender-based violence space for a bit, working both with folks who caused harm in their relationship, and then on the survivor side of that, and you know, ultimately looking to create Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the United States, a world where every human being can reach their full potential.
To me, you are a mind. You're a walking think tank. You don't overanalyze, which you probably say you do.
Yeah, I do. I do.
But my question to that is, out of all that analyzation, is this might get me in trouble, but I don't care.
We said we were going for it, so let's do it.
Duck it. Is black a superpower? More importantly, is being a black man in America a superpower?
Man.
I went for it, didn't I?
You did. You went. You know, I guess in my mind, I think, you know, lots of times, you know, adversity breeds greatness. And I think when we look at black folks, you know, black men and black women, and, you know, how we came to this country and what our condition has been since we've gotten here, is that we have consistently been given barriers, challenges. We've been dehumanized. We have been undermined. And we have, despite all of that, we have still found ways to thrive.
Yeah.
Right. You know, there's no place that you can go on this globe where there is not an imitation of blackness and black culture.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think in that way, I think we're amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I think about this a lot with my kids, right? There are certain things I learned through adversity.
Yeah.
But those things hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I think about how do I cultivate some of those things in my children without the pain.
Yeah.
And I think that's the space I you know, I'm always talking about, is like, yeah, we're great, and our greatness has come through pain, and how do we create spaces for healing so that we can truly enjoy
what we've
created without carrying that pain.
Your kids, two girls.
Mm-hmm.
You're a black man raising two girls.
Correct.
You came from a different lifestyle than they are living.
My kids think I'm a square.
And you are completely not. They don't know.
No, they have no
clue. Talk about your childhood and what's different for them.
I think everything, right? You know, my children have a different relationship with their parents than I had. You know, my parents were never married. My father did not live in the home. He struggled with addiction. We had a really contentious kind of on again, off again relationship, right? And I you know, I'm gonna say this now, like, I don't argue that with nobody. You know, people will say things about parents, and unless you've been in a space with a parent who has significant dysfunction, like, don't talk to me about navigating that.
Yeah.
because, you know, I often feel like I didn't ask to be here, right? Mm-hmm. When I think about the conditions under which I was conceived and was brought into this world, and this is no shade to either of my parents, but I understand they did the best that they could.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also ways that their pain that they were carrying didn't allow them to be able to show up for me.
Yeah.
And so I think for my children, you know, I think they know
mm-hmm.
we'll show up for them.
Mm-hmm.
My kids have a different relationship with money than I have.
Yeah.
My kids have a different relationship with housing.
Yeah.
Than I have. Mm-hmm. My children have a different relationship with food than I have.
Mm-hmm.
My children have a different relationship and ideas about the world around them than I have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the point, right? I remember being early in parenthood and I read an article by a woman and she said, my kids don't understand me and that's okay.
Right.
You know, and I think that is, I don't necessarily want them to understand all the stuff that I had to go through.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what's different. Like their whole life is different and that's cool. That's what we're working toward, right?
Yeah.
Like every generation should be doing better than the generation before them and have different experiences. And within that, we hold on to our Black culture and, you know, and create pride there. So, yeah, that's it. They hold life different.
Yeah. Hey, y'all, we're going to be back with Tristan Gross on The Grapevine. I'm your host, Manan Sabir. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, please call us. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about being a full-time dad. Yes, 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 yes. We're back. We're back with TG. I call him TG, but his real name is Tristan Gross on The Grapevine. Before we get into our subject of being a full-time dad, American Family Insurance is a proud sponsor of The Truth. For almost 100 years, they've been committed to helping families protect what matters most. Your home, your vehicle, and the dreams you're building every single day. And if you're part of The Truth audience, you already know you work hard for yours. That's why having the right protection in place matters. American Family helps you stay ready for whatever life brings so you can focus on moving forward. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly with American Family Insurance. Get a quote or find an agent at amfam.com. Tristan.
Yes, sir.
No matter what, in our society, we have individuals that are either in the home with the mom. And so we're just talking about men. Mm-hmm. In the home with the mom and or outside of the home. But that doesn't, you know, take away from the fact that they can be full-time dads. Am I right?
Absolutely. So I'm looking at the live stream here. It has me listed as the founder of Fathers Making Progress. That's Teron Edwards. That's Teron Edwards. I want to give all the love and recognition to my brother who has dedicated his life to supporting fathers.
We're gonna take that down. But you are a father making progress though.
I hope so. That's the goal.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there are. Absolutely, right? So, I mean, there's been research over the years to look at involved, right? Like the involvement of Black fathers.
Right.
And Black fathers are the most involved group of fathers that there is, right?
Like, yeah, people say, you know, you're barbaric. You guys, you know, make babies and run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, we ain't gonna sit here and pretend like it ain't, right? Like,
right.
Like it's some brothers out here that's foul like
yeah,
that.
Right.
That's not taking care of their young people. Mm-hmm. But we know that there's a spectrum that exists. And so like I think, you know, even as we talk about what it means to be a father, we are like before I am a father, I am a human.
Yeah.
And my ability to be effective as a father definitely depends on how well I'm navigating life.
Yeah.
you know, and so, you know, I think there's lots of conversations that need to be had here, right? Mm-hmm. I think we need to be having more real conversations about sex.
Yeah.
And how men think about sex. And then what that means for I see the swear jar here, so right. But like I know we have a term that we use when we together, but I'm just gonna call it a lack of impulse control.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, realizing that laying down with someone has consequences.
Yeah.
And so if our ideas as men are related to our number of sexual conquests, mm-hmm. right, and we are affirming each other for, you know, being reckless out here mm-hmm. in these streets and running up the body count.
Yeah.
People having babies is a part of that.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And so I think that there are ways where we can, as men, mm-hmm. have different conversations between one another. And, you know, every time I talk about this conversation, you know, I always get the pushback or the feedback about what women need to do. And like, that's a conversation, but that ain't our conversation.
Right.
Right. So mm-hmm. if we think about racism, there's a lot of things that white people need to do in mm-hmm. order to show up differently.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also some things that need to happen within the black community.
Right.
And that's where my focus is.
Yeah.
Right. So, right. Like, I'm gonna let women and girls, right, handle conversations about women and girls,
because
mm-hmm. I know that there are some amazing women out there who are raising the standard and holding the standard and doing amazing.
Yeah.
And they gonna lead those conversations, but as men, we have to hold one another accountable.
That's right.
For these things, right, and we need to be able to tell our homeboy if he foul, mm-hmm. And that you know, like. We can't be sitting next to you watching a game, and I know you ain't taking care of your shorty,
yeah,
right? Or we out kicking it,
and you spending on whatever, and you know, little man at home, like, hey, where you at?
Right,
mm-hmm.
right, right. Or you being devious
with
you know what I'm saying? Like, so I think there are lots of ways that we can create different norms,
mm-hmm.
And raise the bar for each other. As men, and I think that you know, and for us to recognize our humanity,
mm-hmm.
and for us to be in that space of owning what it means to be human and moving through the human experience, so that we can show up for those that we love, because you know, when we're dealing with harm, we end up harming the people who are closest to us.
That's right.
So, like, there's an author named Parker Palmer,
mm-hmm.
And in his book, The Act of Life, he talks about, it's not gonna be an exact quote, but what he says is that if all I have to give community is myself,
yeah.
then taking care of myself is the best gift that I can give to community.
Yes. We have men, and I know you come up with in this, especially after that, you have this question, especially for people who are kind of outside of that conversation, maybe in their head. You have men, you have boys,
mm-hmm.
and boys having babies. Mm-hmm. And this is in Milwaukee specifically, that is a huge, you know, task and also issue. How do you think, Milwaukee is actually tackling that issue right now?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Right. Because oftentimes, the responsibility for reproductive health is put on women and girls.
Mm.
And as men, we're not talking to other boys. We're not talking to boys,
mm-hmm.
right, about being smart, being safe. That sex is not just a physical thing.
Right.
You know, I think a lot of the messages that young men are getting right now are actually the opposite of that. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, when I think back on my relationship with sex, you know, I had a really unhealthy relationship with that. And part of it was some of the messages that I got.
Yeah.
From men in my family.
Yeah.
Right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, man who loved me, who cared about me, right? And then also the other piece of this that I think about often is the emotional, the way we compress the emotional expressions of men and yep. men and boys, right? Mm-hmm. So if, you know, if I don't have spaces that are safe enough for me to say, like, man, I'm struggling right now. This mm-hmm. thing is hurting me. Like, where are the spaces that people care for me other than when I'm laying down next to you?
Right.
And so as I was processing this relationship I had with sex, what I realized is that there were times where I was using sex as an emotional crutch. I needed somebody to care about me. I needed somebody yeah. who would listen to what I had to say. And it felt like the only times I could get that level of intimacy and attention and care mm-hmm. was related to sex. Right. And we've often heard people talk about this idea of, you know, post nut clarity. Right. right. Where, you have sex with someone and then you look over and the need has not been met.
Right.
The emotional need hasn't been met.
Yeah.
The connection that you were looking for is not there. Mm-hmm. And that's one form of, and you, so now you're looking at this person like, man, did all this and, you know, you're feeling disgusted with yourself right, and the, disgusted with right. them.
It's, you're still feeling empty.
Still feeling empty. Still feeling empty.
Are a lot of people, maybe if we even talk about statistically, are we a lot of us are dealing with that.
Oh yeah. Right. I mean, like you go on the internet, and you see it in all sorts of ways, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's talking about, you know, emotional intelligence, and I need somebody to show up and be in tune with their emotions.
Yeah.
And you know, the moment a brother starts expressing some emotion, you know, oh, he's zesty.
Yeah.
Or he's soft.
Yeah.
Right. You know, or there's some other derogatory attack mm-hmm. Around his brother feeling really human emotions.
Right.
And so yeah, I would say until we figure out how to create safe spaces for men
right.
and black men, we are gonna just continue to see this emotional stagnation.
Al. What's up, Al? You on? Yes, go ahead, Al.
You hello? On?
Yes, Al.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, here's my thing. If you want to make safe spaces for men and you want to talk to young children that's doing on people's stuff, just be honest with them. You don't got to coddle them. You don't got to shelter them. Because that's where some of these young men coming up short, because some of their daddies is in the house. Hey, listen, you know, and that's why they out here all messed up in here, like with these young boys. Yeah, you're a young boy, you're having issues, and you're a man, okay? Number one, the withdrawal method ain't never worked for nobody, okay?
Right.
Number two, like I told one of my relatives, you got to be careful on who you're putting your mouth on. Because you're going to mess around and come up and your mouth going to be looking like pot roast with green bell peppers mm-hmm. and onions. Because everything you put your mouth on ain't clean. And some of it is tainted. These kids, they don't know about no doxylene. These young girls don't even know about the old school Vaseline, which is another form of birth control. And I think the problem is they ain't telling them nothing. And if you're really going to get, if you want to get biblical, like the Christians used to tell the young girls back in the day, where they wanted to be saved, they didn't even use that part of their body. They used the devil's back door or their mouth. But what the problem is, y'all not telling the kids nothing. Y'all want to be sheltered. Oh, just come out and tell them. When you come out and tell them, and you might have to tell them in the most pornographic, raw way, they will respect you and they will understand it. And while y'all talking to them, talk to them about their hygiene. Because some of these kids, 14, 15 years old, stanky. They don't know how to clean or wipe themselves. and they got a man in the house. But yeah, everybody know how to lay up and screw. But there's laws and levels of doing it the right way. And stop putting yourself on the head like they going to hell. Because everybody done slammed a couple of car doors in the morning and at night. But if you don't tell them, all right, well, then they're going to be a disaster. And then they're going to keep coming on with more kids, more babies, more diseases, and more scars that's looking like a butterfly. And they ain't going to know where it's coming from until they get that penicillin shot in that rear door. So,
Al, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. You laid it out. And as a matter of fact, I like when you call in because you do tell a lot of truth. We're going to talk more about masculinity in the black community with Tristan Gross. We're going to get into it, baby. This is The Grapevine. Get something and then come right back. Welcome back to The Grapevine. I'm your host, Manon Sabir, and we are back with Tristan Gross. And I had a question. Are men on the island right now?
I would say that some men are. You know, I think that there are ways that I feel connected to brothers in my support network.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where I can call and have vulnerable moments.
Yeah.
And in those moments I feel connected. And I feel, you know, and I feel supported.
Yeah.
You know, but I think that in lots of ways, you know, sometimes when we you know, when we start to buck or we start to kind of grow out of some of the really immature manifestations of masculinity,
mm-hmm.
that space with men is not as safe,
right?
As you know what I'm saying, as you know, if you with your boys and like they objectifying a woman and you like, meh, she also has hopes and dreams and is a human being,
mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? They're like, oh, here he go again, putting his cape on,
right?
And it's like, yeah, like nah.
Are you? I can't sound like NWA right now. Right. We gotta.
Right.
You know.
And so I think, but I think, you know, I think about it this way, is that our liberation as men, is related to our liberation as black folks too.
Yeah.
Right. And so to think about the fact that, Europeans colonized all this stuff, right?
Exactly.
And they gave us definitions of manhood and masculinity that sat more in individualism and that sat more in ideas of domination and that sat more in ideas of worse than better than.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and sometimes we hold. Sometimes we hold on to that because that gives us power,
mm-hmm.
in some ways, and having power feels good. But like, you know, some of us as black men will be willing to criticize everything about a white society except for ideas around manhood and masculinity.
Right.
And we, you know, when we talk about our
criticism, we'll hold on to that,
right,
for, you know, kingdom come.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so when we talk about critical consciousness, right, when we talk about Sankofa,
mm-hmm.
we talk about going back and getting and going back and reclaiming.
Yep.
I think that there are ways that, you know, our ancestors had more communal based communities, mm-hmm. right, where things were asset based and we could look at the skills that a person brought,
mm-hmm.
to community. And be able to respect them for the skills that they bought. Everybody had a place,
right,
in community. And I think that's gotten really difficult to do. And mm-hmm. so,
my last guest was just talking about that, and Moomoo Fresh, and she was saying that how we live in these communities, and we take, you know, certain pieces of this community, like our elder grandfather, our elder great-grandfather, or great-great-grandmother, grandmother, and then we, our mothers, and we, like, all right, mom, I'm moving out at 18. Bye. Yeah. You know, or mom, I'm facing a little hardship at 14. I got to go. And then, you know, grandma's living over here, great grandma's over here, or grandfather. And they're like, everybody's scattered.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not only placing ourselves on the island, but we're also placing everybody else in our family on the island.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we got to come off the island and go see them physically, but also mentally and spiritually, we're becoming more and more disconnected, right?
Yeah. And right, like there's so many studies around this, right? You know, the I mean, right, the internet is a tool.
Yeah.
And just like any tool, in the wrong hands or used improperly, it causes harm.
Right.
And so I think about the internet. I watched a TED Talk a couple years ago, and the topic was around how social media is making us feel lonelier than ever.
Yeah.
Because it's fake connection.
Yeah.
It's fake connection.
Yeah.
Right? It is people cherry picking bits and pieces of their life to share with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's people who are potentially spinning false narratives. Mm-hmm. It's people who are sharing not necessarily what they believe, but what they think other people want them to believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about the watches and the likes and the thises and the thats, right?
Yeah.
And that is no comparison to being able to sit down and share space with another person.
What do you say? What do you say to the dad, to the father that has daughters and sons listening to this? He's in his car. He's probably going to pick them up or is picking them up. He's barely holding on to a job, and he has to wake up and do it again and do it again. And he has probably work on the weekends, you know, paying the bills, you know, but kind of paying the bills. Mm-hmm. What do you say to him?
Carve out a space for yourself. Right. And I know that sometimes that's easier said than done. But, you know, even if it's like, you know what, I'm gonna make sure I drink my water for the day.
Yeah.
I'm gonna make sure I go to bed on time so I'm well rested.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take a moment to meditate.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And do some deep breathing. Or I'm just gonna stretch.
Yeah.
Or I'm gonna do something, right? Like, we, you know, our value as men goes far beyond what we can offer to people and what we can create for people.
Mm.
But again, if we not right in ourselves,
mm.
if we not right in ourselves, then we ain't gonna be right for nobody else.
Yeah, preach.
If we not right for ourselves, we not gonna be right for nobody else. And so it's not selfish. It's not selfish to be like, I just need a minute. Right. And I think I do this for my wife quite often.
Mm.
Right. I she go in the room and close the door, and I'm like a bodyguard.
Mm.
I tell a girl, like, don't go in there and mess with her.
Right.
She needs a moment.
Yeah.
She needs some time.
Yeah.
And I think we do our children we model for them that taking care of ourselves is important,
right,
when we do it in really public ways.
Yeah. Daddy needs a moment. I'm sorry. You know, daddy is, you know, I just need a break. Hey, go to your playroom, go to your, you know, room, watch a little TV, and it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay.
And it's okay to name it too.
Yeah.
Right. It's okay to be like, you know what? Daddy, like, this day has been a whirlwind for me.
Mm-hmm.
There were so many different things going on. Before I move into the next thing, I just need a moment to get myself right.
Yeah.
So that your kids are like, oh, if daddy takes a moment to get himself right, right, then that's cool to do. That's all right. That's all right to do.
Yeah.
And to do it without feeling shame.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the biggest things, and I ain't there yet. I'm trying to learn. I'm trying to let myself learn how to rest,
yeah,
without a shame narrative playing in my head around all the things I could be and should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And allowing myself to just be like, just sit down for a second. And that is an investment in myself. Mm-hmm. And I can say that it has yielded results.
Yeah.
It's yielded results. It makes me more present.
Mm.
It makes me more patient. Right. It helps me to re-goal in a situation, taking a minute.
Yeah.
So I'm in the midst of this heated debate or conversation with my wife or my daughters.
Yeah.
And then I take a minute and I remember we on the same team.
Yeah.
Right. And that, and what our goal is.
Yeah.
And my goal is not necessarily to win this argument. My goal is not necessarily to dominate this conversation. My goal is not to be right or to get you to do what I want you to do. Right. The goal mm-hmm. is, can we create a space where I feel heard, where you feel heard? We talk about what we need and we figure out a shared solution to that.
Is a part of the solution having, and I'm talking to us, talking to people, is a part of the solution having a mission? When you wake up, your mission, but when you have a family, be it that if you're a single mom and or dad, mm-hmm. you know, is it important to even write it down?
Yeah, I mean, right. There's lots of research that goes to say, you know, writing things down or some sort of visualization of a goal,
yeah.
is important to have in terms of maintaining motivation. Mm-hmm. But I think just as important as somebody's mission, right? Because in my mind, mission is about the move. Like I gotta be moving toward my mission. I think what's just as important is your values.
Yeah.
Right. And to be values based. Mm. The one of the best ways we can create safety for other people
yeah.
is by consistently being who we are, no matter what situation arises.
Right.
I'm not gonna get different versions of you. It may show up a little bit differently, yeah. right? Like I can be competitive, you know, and mm-hmm. and I can get out here and I can talk trash with the best of them.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
However. There's certain lines I won't cross
mm-hmm.
because my values won't allow me to, right?
Yeah.
So just as important as having a mission, you gotta have values, because those values then help to put the guardrails,
yep.
and the guide, right? Like if I have my destination, I know where I'm going,
yep.
right? What are the things that's gonna keep me focused? What are the things that are gonna keep me on that road?
Freedom ain't always free, and I think that's what we're gonna come back and talk about. Freedom ain't always free; it always has guardrails. When we come back, we're gonna have our fatherhood advocate, social justice advocate, lover of life, and straight father, Tristan Gross. Come right back. We have Tristan Gross on the grapevine, and we were just having a conversation. But during this conversation, I had a separate conversation in my head. Hey, you know how I be thinking, man. Yeah. I'm thinking like, do guys cry? Do we cry? Is crying needed? I know physically it's a detox. Like I know that from a scientific perspective.
Right.
Right. Are we crying?
You know, it's so interesting. You know, cousins that I grew up with would say,
probably seriously, but definitely my cousins.
You're right. But some cousins that I grew up with,
yeah,
would be like, oh, see, I'm glad the swear jar is sitting right here.
Swear jar.
Because it is a reminder for me to keep him. Right. But it'd be like the only time I ever seen you cry was at a funeral.
Yeah.
And
talking about crying is for yeah
right. I mean, Scarface told us
yeah. Oh right, of course.
Never seen
yeah.
a man cry till I seen a man die. Yep. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I think you know it is. It really is coming back again to how we're defining manhood.
Yeah.
And so before we even move into that, let's talk about the biology of crying.
Yeah.
Right. The research shows us that there are stress hormones that we release via our tears.
Right. Yep.
So if we talk about being stressed, like, man, I'm stressed. Mm-hmm. I'm carrying a lot. Right. Mm-hmm. One way to potentially release some of that stress is let them tears fall.
That's right.
But what I have noticed once I started paying attention to my body is that there are times when I feel like, oh man, like something is evoking an emotion within me.
Yeah.
And I'm so practiced at suppressing it, at pushing it down.
Yeah.
Them tears don't even make it.
Yeah.
They don't even make it.
And they got so many barriers to jump
so
over.
So many barriers.
Yeah.
So many barriers. And you know, I'll say this from, you know, my experience. Once you start diving into your emotionality as a man, it's gonna feel like you out of control at first.
Yeah.
Right. And I talk about it, you know, like I have developed this control mechanism over time. So, you know, when I first moved into to emotionality and being like, all right, I got all this stuff pent up inside of me,
mm-hmm.
and I had two modes. I was either on or off. On or off.
Bruh.
So you got no emotion, or you got it all unfiltered.
Yep. This is like sleep, wake up. Yeah.
Right. Over the years, mm-hmm. what I've been able to develop is a dimmer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And again, if I'm aware of a situation, I can notice a feeling. Ooh, this feeling's coming up.
Yeah.
Cool. I know what to do with I know what I can do with that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I have this feeling. I'm not gonna push it down. I can acknowledge it, but it is not so disruptive that I can't still do what it is I need to do.
Right.
And that is the emotional regulation piece of it. I can respect how I'm experiencing things as a human being,
mm-hmm.
and that does not have to impede my progress.
Yes.
Right. And I think, and ultimately, that's what I've learned. But it's like any other muscle, right? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like when I first started, we was in the basement of Waterway.
Yep.
Right. And we first started boxing together. Right. Like I didn't know what I was. What you mean a four, right?
Right.
Four.
Yeah.
What's a four? But now I'm like, oh, four.
Yeah.
Uppercut. Right.
Yeah. Yep.
So, right. There's the building of the muscle
right.
over time, and like, let's give ourselves a little grace and realize that we have, for many of us, we have never been given the space to exercise those muscles.
So you've navigated fatherhood. Mm-hmm. How do you rebuild after making mistakes? Because a lot of us are, you know, we're running through mistakes. We're bashing through the wall of mistakes. Like, not successfully. We're just bashing mm-hmm. through it. Mm-hmm. And every time you make a mistake, somebody's like, man, you know you made the mistake. Why can't you just hold yourself accountable? Mm-hmm. You know, this is your responsibility to pick these bricks up and put this stuff back together, right? Mm-hmm. How do you rebuild?
I think it starts with how you think about mistakes as it relates to your self-worth.
Yeah.
Right? If you make a mistake and you then feel like something is wrong with you.
Yeah.
Because you made this mistake. Oh, I should have known better.
Right.
Oh, right. Shame and guilt narratives.
Mm-hmm.
Shame and guilt narratives do us no good. Those often make us defensive.
Mm-hmm.
And then we come up with counter narratives in our mind
mm-hmm.
around why all these other things are responsible for the mistake that we made. And sometimes it's true, right? Sometimes it's some things out of our control.
Yeah.
But, you know, ultimately thinking about we talked about this. What are my mission? What's my mission?
Mm-hmm.
And what's my principle?
Right.
What are my principles or values? And the idea that like, if I'm gonna be true to those things,
mm-hmm.
then I don't have space for delusion.
Yeah.
Because avoiding accountability is delusion.
It is. It is.
And it's a sign of immaturity.
Yeah.
Right? Only an immature person would look at a reality and say, no, that ain't the reality.
Yeah.
Because it don't make me feel good.
Yeah. The truth.
Right? You got to be able to sit. You got to be able to sit with uncomfortable truths,
mm-hmm.
and not assign them to your worth as a human being. And then come back, right? Like, so then the path back from that is your reconciliation needs to be reciprocal to the harm that was caused.
Yeah.
So if I said something crazy in front of a group of people, and then I called the person I said it to, and we talking one-on-one, like, hey, bro, my bad. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I owe that same level of accountability to everybody who was in the space when I caused the harm.
That's right.
So either when we get back together again, I got to be like, hey, y'all, I owe y'all apology.
Yeah.
Right? Or you want to toss it in the group chat?
Mm-hmm.
Toss it in the group chat. If you want to call people individually, call people individually.
Mm.
Right? And sit with it. And sit with it. Realize that people are entitled to have whatever response to your harm,
yes,
that they have,
yes,
and part of the that's a natural consequence of making a mistake,
mm-hmm.
right? Sometimes I get a little impatient with my youngest daughter.
She's
a tender soul.
Yeah,
and she don't want to talk to me for a little bit after that, and I'm like, dang, right?
Yep.
And I got to sit in that, and I use that discomfort of her not wanting to talk to me, you know, for the next 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah.
To remind me why it's so important for me to be careful with my words.
Where can before we're going to get to this is a part of our segment where we do like rapid fire.
Cool.
But before we get to rapid fire, where can people find you?
I'll be at home. I'll be out the way. I'm not really active on social media.
Yeah.
That's a whole other conversation around what I've learned stepping away from that,
yeah.
from that space. I have a Facebook page.
Yeah.
Folks shoot me a message on there,
mm-hmm.
Around, you know, what they're, you know, whatever questions. I'm always open
yep.
to link up and just have tea, have coffee, and talk to somebody through a thing. Because that's how I define community.
That's
community
right.
Community is being there for each other.
And I think, you know, for me as a fatherhood social justice advocate, and for me, you are a professional in that space. I thank you for coming. I thank you for allowing yourself to be open to this type of conversation. It's not the end, because we're definitely going to have some more conversations around fatherhood.
We just touched the surface.
But before we leave, our rapid fire question, we got a couple. Girl dad or boy dad?
Just dad.
Hardest age to parent?
I feel like middle schoolers are weird, bro.
Yeah. One word that describes fatherhood.
Love.
What's more important, time or money?
Time.
Biggest parenting lesson?
Get out your own way.
What would you tell the 20-year-old Tristan?
I think I would tell myself to invest in my healing.
Yeah.
That I don't have to carry, you know, that I don't have to carry those old wounds.
Yeah.
And that I don't have to live up to other people's expectations of me. I get to set and define those for myself.
And that's y'all, Tristan Gross on the Grapevine. I'm your host, Manon Sabir. We have Jazz and Meech coming up next with the Chad Roper. Woo! Thank you, Tristan.
Appreciate you, bro.
We out, y'all.